Hi, friends. My name is Caitlin Eastler, and this is the Happy at Work podcast, nurturing business success through workplace connection and well-being. Join me on this journey as we applaud the forward-thinking people leaders who deeply understand the value and connection between investing in purposeful, people-first cultures and attaining positive business outcomes. By day, I'm the founder and CEO of Happily and mom to Hannah, which is the best job ever. And I've recently taken on the added role of head of culture and software, talent advisory at DSG. Together, we collaborate with people leaders nationwide who are doing amazing things in the new world of work. Happy at Work gives us an opportunity and the extreme pleasure of highlighting this important work, the work of those that are deeply committed to their roles as innovators, passionate leaders, and guardians in creating and protecting exceptional cultures. From championing learning and development to prioritizing employee mental and physical health, social impact, and overall workplace well-being, these leaders make a difference. Stay tuned to hear the lessons learned from these exceptional humans. Thank you for joining us on this journey. We are so glad you're here. Hello, friends. I am so excited to introduce you to Jenny Sade. Jenny has spent her career in the media, entertainment, and creative space and is one of the most incredible chief people officers I've ever met, and really just executives and humans. So excited for you to learn a little bit about some of the awesome things that I've seen Jenny do when it comes to communications, which I'm learning is like one of the most important things that a company and a chief people officer can do to help a company accomplish their goals. So Jenny, can you want to tell our community a little bit about how we came to work together and why I'm obsessed with how you communicate and the systems that you use that I've been so, so helpful?
Sure. So I spent the first 20 years of my career or so in people operations roles at various organizations. So big companies, small, public, private. And in that people operations role, I was always at the intersection of getting the right people on the bus in the right seats, and then figuring out the systems, tools, processes, and modes of communication to help them do their jobs in the most effective ways. And so after I left my like litany of full-time jobs and started Sade Advisory, I started doing that fractional CPO work for businesses. And so oftentimes those were businesses that either were at a more nascent stage and they weren't quite ready for a full-time CPO, or they had mid-level HR support, but they didn't have the overarching strategy for how those people plug into the broader business objectives. And so I started doing some of that work across a variety of different businesses. And then we met through one of the businesses I was supporting in that capacity. So doing some change management and kind of helping them figure out how to sell change management solutions to their clients.
Awesome. Yeah. So Happily recently launched a partnership with Diversified Search Group. And in that I'm sitting in an internal seat as head of culture. And we have been partnering to do an employee engagement survey. You came into the mix. We were trying to figure out the best way to roll out the strategy or the survey, but also to make sure that people felt really comfortable with the confidentiality of the information and to make sure that we could take that survey and actually turn it into actionable insights. And what I find so interesting is, being that I have never sat in a CPO role and I've always been on the talent management side or the CEO side of a business, how thoughtful you have been around how to take in that survey data, how to respect people's the confidentiality, and how to take what's important out of the survey to turn that into actionable insights. And then the communications piece, right, that we've talked about is so important. Can you tell us a little bit about that process? Because I have never seen it done so well. So I know there'll Thank be you. Some gems for people to walk away from when they hear how you handled it.
Yeah, I think, look, Diversified is at this really exciting inflection point, and it makes a ton of sense that they'd want to do an engagement survey at this point. They've acquired all these businesses. It's a growing, changing kind of market and beast. And that actually is something I had a lot of experience with in my past businesses, is working for businesses that were acquiring other businesses and kind of building and growing and accelerating. And the process of integrating all of those people into one holistic mission and culture can be really challenging. There's a lot of inherent growing pains associated with that. So I was excited to work on the survey because I knew that we'd see a lot of that feedback come through. You know, you're expecting the standard things. You're expecting people to want more communication, to want more transparency, sort of the basics that every business that is at any stage of its growth or evolution will get that feedback. But I think a lot of the success is in our ability to communicate the outcomes and the actionable takeaways in a way that people can hear. And by people, I mean both the team who's filling out those surveys. You want them to feel heard and to feel like they're getting an opportunity to, in a safe environment, verbalize the things that they really care about. But then also that you're framing them to leadership in a way that makes them feel motivated and activated to make change against the opportunities or the areas of growth. So when I read through that survey data, the confidentiality is obviously crucial. It's how do we create the environment where people feel safe saying the real things that they mean? The second piece is what are the trends that I can see and how clear are they and what can I extract from those trends and from that data? And then the third is how do I boil that down into overarching themes that are digestible and that we can start to make recommendations and action against? I think it's easy to put out an engagement survey and then to never follow up, but it's such a missed opportunity to make the employees feel like they're a part of shaping the culture that they're contributing to. So I think it was a lot of that. It was a lot of like thinking through what's the best way to articulate this so that it resonates in a way that makes people want to act against this feedback or in service of this feedback. And with any engagement survey, there's stuff that's also really great and you don't want that to get lost in the wash. You want to make sure that you're highlighting and reinforcing the things that are working and focusing the same amount of energy and attention on reinforcing those things as you are at highlighting the growth opportunities and creating action plans against them.
Yeah. And I think what stood out to me is like you are such a good and thoughtful communicator and you leave no room for gray area or for people to wonder what the answer is. And I think that that level of communication from we received your survey. Thank you so much for filling it out. This is confidential. This is our timeline for doing the work to understand your feedback. And then here's when you're going to hear the feedback and here's what you're going to hear. And then, you know, by the way, some of this we can fix right away. Some of it's going to take a while. So there are all those drips of communications that you are so good at making sure are laid out. Did you just know how to do that naturally? Did you learn from it not going well at some point? Like, how did you get to that place?
Yes, to both of those things. I think I had certainly learned in previous environments that in absence of a compelling narrative, there's a tendency, and it's human and super normal, but there's a tendency to fill in that narrative for yourself. And that's not always productive, and it can often be really distracting. So we certainly saw that, you know, in multiple businesses that I've worked in, but also in this particular survey, really understanding, oh, here are the pieces where we could actually provide more proactive communication, and it would help fill that gap. And it reduces a lot of the chatter and a lot of the noise. So the goal is obviously, let's get everybody to a place where they're focused and they can focus on the work. And a lot of these side conversations are really distracting. Part of it was definitely experience watching it go differently and identifying that, oh, we could have done X, Y, and Z. I also think in this role and really in any leadership role, especially for a business that has a storied history, so 30 years, 50 years like a Diversified, 70 years like a Playboy, you have all of these legacy ways of working that you're contending with. And so sometimes as the incoming CPO, you're digging out of a hole that you didn't necessarily create. But the reality for those employees is that there have been elements of their experience that they've either deeply enjoyed and really appreciated and sometimes both, that perhaps haven't met their expectations. And so there's a lot of empathy in the communication required to understand that, you know, those employees aren't frustrated with me or even really with this process. They care deeply. And that's actually as long as you have a population that deeply cares, there's a lot you can do with that to help them feel re-engaged and plugged back into the business.
Yeah, it goes both ways too, right? You have a leadership team that really deeply cares, and you have an employee population that deeply mm-hmm. cares. And it's how to make sure that it's almost like you've built this bridge through your communication style and through your feedback on how that can go so that both can hear that.
Yeah, it's like, how do you help them meet each other in the middle? And what does that look like? And then the reality is I'm not going to be in the room all the time. So what are the systems and processes and training and opportunities to impart some of that toolkit to a variety of people so that that tool set and those instincts lives within the organization, or at least serves as a shared lexicon that they can use as they're navigating future challenges?
Yeah. And just off of this, or continuing this topic of communication, one of the other things I've seen you do really wonderfully is kind of thinking through anything you do from a people and HR perspective and how that ties to the North Star. Can you tell us a little bit about how you help companies come up with that structure and operationalize it in a way that everything feels really connected versus feeling like we've got, you know, a DEI initiative over here and we have onboarding over here and we have volunteerism over here and they're not all connecting?
Yeah. I mean, it all sort of starts with the clarity of the North Star. So I think that's a really important piece. Some of the work that I've done in advising organizations and executives is to really help them craft what that North Star is and be able to articulate it in a way that feels accessible. I think the second piece to that is really creating that steady drumbeat of what is that North Star and how does it show up in all of our communications. It's tied closely to some of the work that I've done with organizations about operationalizing their values so that those values and that North Star aren't just that thing that you write on the wall or that show up on the website or that appear in your new hire handbook, but they're actually a lens through which you're making all of the operating decisions of the business. So I like when I work with different employee groups internally, helping them figure out how what they're doing day to day plugs into that broader objective. And if I can effectively bridge that gap for them, and if we can get a leadership team that has dissemination channels for that North Star, and they're really taking it upon themselves to help disseminate what they're learning in those executive meetings at the top and making sure that their employees don't feel like cogs in the machine, but they're all plugged into this broader impact that the organization is trying to have, then we really see engagement dramatically increase. So with something like a DEI initiative, it isn't just DEI in service of DEI because it's important. While it is important, it's also that creating a culture in which everyone can do their best work is in service of the broader business objectives and whatever that North Star is. So really thinking about what are those through lines, what are those narrative threads, and how do you create that connective tissue for people so that it doesn't just feel like they're in a vacuum doing their day-to-day, but they're doing their day-to-day and it's meaningfully moving the needle for the business.
It's interesting. I hear you today and then in, you know, our wonderful interactions as we partner, say this in service of. And it's mm-hmm. interesting because I just think it's such an important question to ask ourselves when we're doing things and making decisions is what is this in service of? And then does it tie to that mm-hmm. North Star? How do you get companies to ask that more regularly and to make that part of their everyday culture versus it being something that's like a new thought?
It's kind of a muscle. Right? Like anything, if you exercise it enough, it starts to feel normal or it starts to feel natural. So a lot of that is through some of the advisory or coaching work that I'll do with organizations. Sometimes I'll work with one executive, sometimes I'll work with entire executive teams, but it's empowering with the tools to think strategically and critically about their business and to pass that knowledge to their second level and that second level to their third level. So how do you create a culture around this is the way that we strategically talk about our business? So yeah, I think it's a little bit of that.
I love it. And I know in your new business and probably in every role you've ever had, you've done a lot of kind of partnering with the C-suite, partnering with the CEO on communications as a key theme. What does that work look like? And what's your process in terms of thinking how to do that best?
Yeah, I really love doing that work. I think that sometimes is where I do my best work. I love working with executives who are smart, obviously, but who are committed and who are self-aware. They sort of know what their strengths are. They are excited to surround themselves with a team that can help augment their capabilities that perhaps they in areas where they don't feel as strong. And the process is to really get to know them and to get to know the organization and to understand what the opportunities are. And I use that word all the time, but also I use it very broadly. And sometimes when I say opportunities, I actually mean challenges. But I think that reframe in understanding that even where there are areas of deficiency or there are areas of growth or growing pains, that means there's something tangible. There's a hole that we can plug or there's a strategy that we can create to address whatever that disconnect is. So I like to understand holistically, what are the things that are important to this leader? What kind of executive are they hoping to be? What do they want people to know about them? And what do they need from the surrounding team in order to be successful? And then helping them craft language that is unifying. I think, you know, it's easy to be directive or it's easy to use language that perhaps doesn't bring everyone along on the journey with you. And not to say that that's bad, that's certainly some people's style and it works for them, but the type of communication I enjoy participating in and drafting and kind of coaching my clients through is the kind that really brings people on that journey so that as you arrive at this end destination, you really feel like you've developed a strength in those relationships and everyone's pushing on the same side of the rock.
Yeah, in some ways, I think about your expertise in terms of communications and bringing people together and long list. But in some ways, like you help people to bring out what's already in their heart that they don't always verbalize or show in some ways. Like I think you have this like magic for pulling out the good and giving people a pathway to express that in a way that people are more able to receive it.
That's a really nice way of phrasing that. Thank you. My husband will actually say something similar. He's like, you find the good in everybody, which is, I probably do, but I like that. I like to figure out what are this person's strengths and how do I augment them? I think it's a lot harder to say what are these person's core capabilities and what am I going to ask them to do that is contrary to them. So you really have to work with what you're working with. And it's just sort of an understanding of like, these are the areas where this person really shines. How can I double down on those skill sets?
Absolutely. And I think you come in with fresh eyes too, which is a beautiful thing, right? Like I think about like your role today in a consulting capacity with the companies that are so lucky to have you working with them versus where you were when you were at Playboy or you were at the advertising agency. I think when we're in it, sometimes it's hard to like, we see different things. And so what is that like for you to come in as a consultant to organizations versus when you were sitting in seat and like, how is that experience different for you?
That's a great question. I've spent a lot of time thinking about this over the last 6 months. Part of it is that when you're embedded in an organization and the organization goes through round after round after round of change or pivot, you get pivot fatigue. And I think that's really common. And we'll certainly, I've seen that certainly in certain engagement surveys and previous roles. I think when you come in as a consultant, there's pros and cons to both, right? So you may feel that pivot fatigue, but when you're actually able to impart change in a full-time capacity, you're also able to celebrate that victory in a way that feels really real and tangible, and you're part of that solution. So there is, at least for me, there's a little bit of a disconnect. When I started consulting, I felt like I would set up these systems and processes, and I'd be like, good luck, keep me posted on how that goes.
Yeah.
But I felt disconnected to actually getting to celebrate those victories and see them fully play out. On the pro side of the consulting arrangement, I don't have the same pivot fatigue. I'm not trying to solve these problems and coming from the perspective of I've solved this every 18 months for the last 6 years. Why can't we land the plane? And so having the energy to do that, having no baggage, having none of that fatigue coming in fresh to each of these problems is motivating. And so while it's hard not to get to celebrate the victories in the same way, I've had to recalibrate what the success looks and feels like on the consulting side. And it isn't necessarily getting to see through everything to fruition, but it's getting to be the catalyst for that change in the organization. And then to retain a relationship with a lot of those people in the aftermath to understand what it looks like after you put those processes and systems in place. So it's been a recalibration for me for that reason, but I really enjoy it.
So Jenny, if you were to think about if a company could only do one thing and they couldn't have all the programs and they were like, we love our people, but we have limited time and limited resources, what type of cultural program should they invest in?
I love that intensely. That's such a hard question. I mean, I think it honestly depends on what phase of growth they're in. It's like if you have a business and you have 0 to 10 people, then I think that initial programming can be really simple. It's like spend time together, articulate your ways of working, codify them, figure out what your 3 or 4 or 5 values are and embed them in the way that you make decisions, embed them in your review process, in the way that you communicate with each other, figure out what it looks like to live those values. I think as you get to 25 to 50 people, then you're in sort of this next phase of what that cultural evolution looks like. And I think then you're investing in communication channels. It's that the stuff that you overheard in an office of 4 people and you were privy to every decision that was made in the entire organization, you're no longer privy to at that 50-person marker. So redefining what the communication looks like, even redefining terms like transparency and understanding that transparency at 4 people looks very different than what transparency could and should look like at 50 people. So you kind of are identifying your deputies and you're arming them with the skill set to communicate what the business is doing and to keep people looped in. I think at 130 people, you're sort of at that next inflection point. So I don't know that there's kind of one programming note or like one silver bullet, but it's really to continue to build on those values and on that North Star and on the way that you're communicating them internally so that as you grow, people are feeling connected and reconnected with some kind of steady cadence back to those broader objectives.
So it sounds like North Star values and communication are relevant in any stage.
In all of the stages. And then really to hold people accountable for living those values. You know, those have to be unchanging regardless of the macro and micro climates in order for them to be effectively upheld.
So important. So Jenny, I always think that sitting in the role that you've sat in for your career and the work that you do is beautifully impactful and requires a lot of heart. How do you take care of yourself from a wellness perspective so that you can keep pouring into others?
That's such a good question. I've gotten a lot better about that. In the beginning of my career, I felt everything very intensely and I carried it around all the time. And it's really hard not to. You deeply care. You deeply want these people to be successful. You love these businesses. I think, you know, at a certain point in my career, I realized A, that was not going to be sustainable and B, I was tired. So I think there's sort of a different methodology that I employ now. And a lot of that is around establishing self-care rituals outside of work. So for me, that's exercise, which has always been really helpful. I always was sort of a cardio junkie, but I started lifting really heavy weights this year, which has made me feel dramatically more present in my body. It's sort of a different kind of meditative activity. So doing something physical and kind of feeling connected in the present with my body has been really helpful. I also, and I'm sure people have many philosophies on whether or not this is actually self-care, but I watch really shitty TV. So things like super trashy reality shows, the kind of shows that stress some people out, make me feel incredibly calm. I don't know if it's like a comparison game where I watch it and I think, well, I guess I pretty much have it together comparatively. But I find that to be really relaxing also. Yeah. And then just like time with friends and family. So we travel. I see my family a lot. My husband and I go up north to see them. His family lives in Sydney. And so we spend a lot of time trekking back and forth from there too. And that's always a good way to plug back in.
That's a good way for you to get all your binge watching in.
It's true. If you've ever been stuck on a plane for 12 hours and can't sleep while you fly, so many episodes of The Real Housewives.
Perfect. Well, thanks for sharing time today, Jenny. I know that our community will gain so much from your expertise and your willingness to share. And I just really appreciate how authentically you show up in all ways. And so grateful for the chance to work with you and our friendship. So thank you.
Thank you. That was really nice.